a lively boy. But the burden and anxiety for him were heavy on his sister's heart, who had taken over bodily all the worries of her mother. Then there was the baby, Doris, with her big, pathetic eyes and her round cheeks and loving ways. Doris, too, had to be shut in the dark little house with the summer heat coming on and no one with time enough or strength enough to take her to the park. Doris was only 4. Oh, it was terrible, terrible. And Shirley could do nothing but sit there and click those keys and earn her poor little inadequate salary. Someday, of course, she would get more, but someday might be too late. She shuddered as the terrible thought flashed through her mind, then went on with her work again. She must shake off this state of mind and give attention to her duty, or she would lose even this opportunity to help her dear ones. The door of the outer office opened, and Mr. Barnard entered.
"Miss Hollister," he said hurriedly, "if you have those letters ready, I will sign them at once. We have just had word that Mr. Baker of the firm died last night in Chicago, and I must go on at once. The office will be closed for the rest of the day. You can let those other matters that I spoke of go until tomorrow, and you may have the day off. I shall not be at the office at the usual hour tomorrow morning, but you can come in and look after the mail. I will leave further directions with Mr. Clegg. You can mail these letters as you go down."
10 minutes later, Shirley stood on the street below in the warm spring sunshine and gazed about her, half-dazed. It seemed a travesty on her poor little life just now to have a holiday and no way to make it count for the dear ones at home. How should she use it, anyway? Should she go home and help Carol? Or should she go out and see whether she could find a house somewhere that they could possibly afford to move to? That, of course, was the sensible thing to do. Yet she had no idea where to go. But they did not expect her home at this time of day. Perhaps it was as well that she should use this time and find out something without worrying her mother. At least she would have time to think, undisturbed. She grasped her little package of lunch that she brought from home with her and looked about her helplessly. In her little thin purse was the dime she always carried with her to pay her car fare, in case something happened that she had to ride either way, though she seldom rode, even in a storm. But her mother insisted on the dime. She said it was not safe to go without any money at all. This dime was her capital wherewith to hunt a house. Perhaps the day had been given her by a kind heavenly father to go on her search. She would try to use it to the best of her ability. She lifted her bewildered heart in a feeble petition for light and help in her difficult problem, and then she went and stood on the corner of the street where many trolley cars were passing and repassing. Which one should she take, and where should she go? The 10 cents must cover all her riding, and she must save half of it for her return. She studied the names on the cars. "Glenside Road," one read. What had she heard about that? Ah, that it was the longest ride one could take for 5 cents within the limits of the city's roads. Her heart leaped up at the word. It sounded restful anyway, and would give her time to think. It wasn't likely, if it went near any glens, that there would be any houses within her means on its way. But possibly it passed some as it went through the city, and she could take notice of the streets and numbers and get out on her return trip to investigate if there proved to be anything promising. Or if it were too far away from home for her to walk back from it, she could come another time in the evening with George, some night when he did not have school. Anyhow, the ride would rest her and give her a chance to think what she ought to do, and one car was as good as another for that. Her resolve was taken, and she stepped out and signaled it. There were not many people in the car. It was not an hour when people rode out to the suburbs. 2 workmen with rolls of wallpaper slung in burlap bags, a woman and a little girl, that was all. Shirley settled back in her seat and leaned her head against the window sash wearily. She felt so tired, body and soul, that she would have been glad to sleep and forget for a little while, only that there was need for her to be up and doing. Her room had been oppressively warm the night before, and Doris, who slept with her, had rolled from one side of the bed to the other, making sleep well-nigh impossible for the elder sister. She felt bruised and bleeding in her very soul, and longed for rest.